Concrete on Dartmouth on the first frost of November 1984, walked out of the front door of his residence in Brazoria County, Texas, walked across his front yard out into a farm road that passes in front of his house, walked a short distance down the farm road right away, took a right-hand turn, walked 22 feet down a slope off the right-of-way, and walked into a 12-foot square box culvert owned and maintained by the State Department of Highways and Public Transportation, and he was injured. His purpose in going to this location was he had noticed from earlier visits that deer were watering in the creek that drained into this culvert, and he had set up a deer blind. He had gone down there in the dark without the aid of artificial lighting to wait on the deer. This is, I believe, the first day of deer hunting season. To illustrate it, I'd like to draw just a quick sketch of the area so you can see the outline of what this looks like. Now, this is in Brazoria County. It's not far from the St. Bernard River. The roadway, Hank's house, is across the road from the culvert. It's an FM road. St. Bernard River is right here. This is a fill area, which is a valley where a little creek runs through. It comes down like this, here, and the creek runs off this way. There's a fence line here, and I believe a fence line right here that he had set up a deer blind. The box culvert drained this creek right here. The dimension from the traveled way of the road, the traveled portion of the road, is 22 feet from the head wall of the culvert. This is his house. Walk out here, turn here, fell in. The culvert has been there for many, many years, drains that area, drains the whole area, and eventually leads to the St. Bernard River.
How many years had Mr. Payne been there?
Mr. Payne had been there over 2 years. He had purchased the, over 2 years before the accident. He had purchased the property sometime prior to that and had made many visits out there. The state's position in this case, it being a case brought under the Texas Tort Claims Act, the premise liability portion of it, is that the culvert does not constitute a special defect to increase the state's duty. The rationale for that is based on the language of the statute, Chapter 101, Civil Practice and Remedies Code, known as the Tort Claims Act. The specific sections are 022 and 060.022.060. And the prior opinion of the Supreme Court here, which I believe is the Eaton case, Harris County v. Eaton, and the language of the statute. The state's position here is that the First Court of Appeals in Houston erred in characterizing this as a special defect, and that the cause should be reversed and rendered for the petitioner, State of Texas. The question arises, why is this not a special defect? All of the cases save one associate special defects with the roadway, even though this is a portion of a roadway. It is 22 feet off the traveled portion and is not in such proximity to the traveled portion of the road to interfere with anyone using the traveled portion of the roadway. It's well clear of the roadway.
Is it the state's position that this is a premises defect and not a specific defect?
The state's position is this is not a special defect. If anything, it would be a premises defect giving rise to the duty of the state, that of a licensor to a licensee.
And the resolution of that problem determines the outcome of the case.
Yes, sir.
So this is a one-issue lawsuit.
That's correct on this appeal, yes, Your Honor. The sole error that I allege on the Court of Appeals is that they characterize this as a special defect, and that is not justified. It is in conflict with all the other special defect cases, including the recent ones out of the 14th District in Houston, and also its own decision, the first, that being the Payne versus Galveston case and I believe the Blankenship case, both Galveston seawall cases. With this not being a special defect, and given Mr. Payne's knowledge of the location, familiarity with the culvert, and also his election to go out here blinded by darkness, and the record will also show that Mr. Payne just happened to be blind in one eye additionally, his knowledge vitiates the state's duty to warn, any duty of the state to warn of this condition, because he would have been no better off.
Doesn't that speak to contributory negligence more than anything else?
That was the ruling of the Court of Appeals by holding this to be a special defect, and they held that that would address contributory negligence. Our position is, though, that these culverts are such a common feature of every roadway that it would be impossible and impractical to place the sort of duty on the state to have illuminated signs for every piece of drainage hardware throughout the state. This is analogous to people driving on the Galveston seawall at night without their headlights and then complaining that the state has not warned them when they drive off the edge of the wall. It is undisputed in the facts, in the statement of facts, that there was at least one Type 3 object marker marking this location, called for by the Manual of Uniform Traffic Patrol Devices. Mr. Payne testifies to this.
A lot of these culverts have covers on them. I assume this one didn't.
It has a vertical face. It's a large 12-foot square concrete thing that goes through this fill area. When this road was first built, I believe back in the 20s or 30s, they had to come in and fill it with fill material, limestone and dirt, to make the road level, to make the grade level. The importance, the special defect cases, and the reason that this is not a special defect is that it in no way is in a place to interfere with people that drive on the highway. All the other special defect cases, the last Supreme Court case being Harris County v. Eaton, I mentioned earlier, dealt with a large hole in the roadway that, at least under the facts, caused the car to turn over. The Chapel v. Dwyer case dealt with an arroyo that ran alongside the roadway, but the brush had grown in a deceptive manner that made it appear like another roadway, which led a motorist off to drive, operating their motor vehicle as they normally would, to drive off in this area. The Jean case and the Freeman case, Harris County, I believe it's Houston v. Jean, and City of Pasadena v. Freeman, both of those cases dealt with ditches that were right at the end of the roadway, where you have motorists traveling. And they're not expecting this sort of thing to road in suddenly and off they go.
I'm not criticizing your artistic ability, but it's awfully hard to tell. Is the slope immediately above the culvert and between the culvert and the roadway, is that a very steep slope or is that a gradual slope?
It begins gradually here for about 10 feet. Actually, this is kind of rolled here. But for about 10 feet of it, it's a gradual slope. Of course, it comes from the crown of the road and drains. And then as it approaches the head wall, the curvature becomes more steep. There is sufficient room on the side of this, though, with 22 feet here before it begins to flatten, before it begins to drop off. And even at its steepest point would be only approaching a 1-to-1 slope, mostly a 2-to-1 slope, and flatter than that close to the road. There would be no problem.
Under the facts of the case, did Mr. Payne slip on the slope, or did he just step over?
He walked straight off it.
Okay.
He did not slip down, stumble, roll, and fall. He hurtled off into space with his rifle in one hand. He was headed for this very area. He had just misjudged where it was, because his deer blind was right there. He was deliberately going into this area. And he was deliberately going at dark. Now, what the strategies of deer hunting without a flashlight are, I don't know, but he was trying to get to this very area. He wasn't a random pedestrian out here in the middle of the countryside that was trapped by this situation. He knew it was there, and he knew he had to be careful for it. And he saw the object marker that was there. His complaint was that one of two object markers was down. That was the nature of his complaint. The other cases dealing with special defects deal with clearly holes in the road, things that at least the cases have interpreted the legislative intent to be something, to be an unexpected hazard to motorists using the road. Which are, I think, is reasonable. The state believes that's reasonable. That if you have a huge pothole in the road, you have floodwaters across the road, you have muddy conditions in a construction area across the road that present a hazard out there where people are driving, supposed to be driving, then that a lesser duty on the part of the state, at least as far as to warn goes, as far as its duty to warn of the special defects of which it has knowledge or should have knowledge, is not unreasonable. This case is quite comparable, I believe, to the Galveston seawall case where I believe it was Justice O'Connor's concurring opinion in Blankenship visited about the association with the roadway and the fact that even though part of it, there's a roadway that goes on the Galveston seawall, the roadway portion is separated from the edge of the wall by, I've forgotten exactly the dimensions, I believe it was a smaller distance than illustrated here.
Do you take the position that to be a special defect, it has to be in the roadway?
It has to be in the roadway, yes, Your Honor, or in close proximity there, too, to interfere with
what's
the use of the roadway.
Close proximity? I'm not
close enough to be reasonably, at least under the, I believe, the Jezik, it's the Jezik v. City of Midland case, articulates the rule of close proximity, whereby it's kind of a subjective standard that says if it's reasonably foreseeable that the defect is close enough to interfere with those persons using the travel way.
Is this on the right-of-way, this defect, you imagine?
The culvert is on the right-of-way, yes, sir. It's within the right-of-way dimensions.
And where he fell, of course, was in the right-of-way.
That's correct. That's correct. State property would run to the fence line, which is just down the stream here, just 10 feet, I believe. It's probably a 30-foot right-of-way out there. If this is not a special defect, if the court holds and upholds the previous decisions that characterize special defects and limits them to something in the roadway that does pose an unreasonable hazard to motorists using the roadway, it vitiates the state's duty to warn Mr. Payne of this circumstance and acts as a bar to his recovery and would call for rendering this decision in favor of the state. There's no question he knew it was there. He was headed exactly for that area. That concludes my opening.
Thank you, counsel. Your argument now for the respondent.
May it please the court. Your Honor, Mr. John L. Pierce II from Navasota will present the argument for respondent.
May it please the court. Mr. Hill. In November of 1984, the plaintiff, Kenneth Payne, the respondent in this court, going deer hunting in the pre-dawn, almost light, with a car approaching him with his headlights on, went to this area. Admittedly built and maintained, controlled, and known of by the state of Texas. He stepped off the end of a culvert. So really the culvert's not the problem here. It's the fall at the end of it. A 12-foot apron at the edge of this culvert, which was owned, maintained, and controlled by the state of Texas. Furthermore, the state of Texas had for some time known of a serious erosion problem between the culvert and Mr. Payne's house, which was some 100-some-odd yards from this area. So even though Mr. Payne knew this culvert was there, so did the state. and the state had allowed, unquestionably, an excess overgrowth of vegetation to obscure this culvert, to correct this erosion problem. They put up the delineators for the warning purpose, as they recognized and characterized this situation throughout the deposition testimony of Robert Payne, no relation to the plaintiff, who's the assistant superintendent of the state, that they put up these delineators to warn of this condition. One or more of those delineators had either become obscured because of the overgrowth of vegetation, which is right at the mouth of this culvert, over which obscured this 12-foot drop-off, off of which Mr. Payne fell when he misjudged the delineators, not knowing one or more had been slumped off or obscured. He misjudged where this culvert was, walked off the edge of it, fell 12 feet, and broke his knees. Pretty serious injury.
I understand that Mr. Payne is also handicapped visually.
No, sir. There was testimony that he was partially blind in one eye, but during the trial he was able to read the clock at the back of the courtroom with that eye, covering the other eye, as I recall. He had some visual deficiency, but that...
I didn't contribute to
that. No, sir. No way contributed to his fall. It was the, as the Court of Appeals held, it was the overgrowth of vegetation that obscured, which is contrary and distinguishable from the Blankenship case and the Payne versus City of Galveston cases, which were, the courts mentioned, unobscured, open and obvious. Furthermore, this case was really tried as a general charge case. The objection of the state in this case, in the appellate court, in the Court of Appeals, was that issues were not submitted on, number one, whether or not a dangerous condition was submitted. That was their first point. And implicitly in there, then he goes into the special defect. However, whether a special defect is a question of fact or a question of law, it was decided by the jury in this case. A general charge was submitted with ample instruction defining special defects, defining the duty, defining dangerous condition, and a general charge as dictated by our rules in Lemus, this court in Lemus versus Montez is the method this case was presented to the jury. The jury had ample instruction and fact to determine in this case, which as a matter of law, because there was no controversy in the facts were undisputed. The state characterized this situation as a hazard. This court, in the 1945 case of City of Fort Worth versus Lee, held that where a 14-year-old child had run off the end of a road off of a bluff, they call that an excavation. Now, this court in Harris County versus Eaton has said, by using the principle of justem generis, that the excavation or obstruction is by way of example, and it does not limit the class. Certainly close proximity allows us, this was in close proximity to the roadway. But the state of Texas owned, as admitted, at least 30 feet out there. There's no question, no controversy that they had the duty and accepted responsibility to maintain this. Also, they allowed this excess growth of vegetation, admittedly, to correct this erosion problem that had become created and from which they had known about for many times. State had a duty. The state created this condition which contributed to this man's injuries. They created this condition by allowing the overgrowth of vegetation and allowing this man to, although he knew the general vicinity of this drop-off, he did not appreciate where it was at that time, at that day, because the warnings put up had been changed, had fallen off. In Harris County versus Eaton, this court said that when the even in a licensor or licensee situation, when the licensor has knowledge, and in other cases say when they create it, they're deemed to have knowledge. So the state had knowledge in this case, and even were it a licensee case, a licensor or licensee case, the state still had a duty to warn this person. But in any event, this case was tried as a special defect. Everybody recognized it as a special defect. And it was determined because there was no controversy of the facts. The facts, by the state's own admission, hazard. We had duty to warn. We allowed the overgrowth of vegetation. It was a question of this man's contrib in confronting that situation. As Highland Park versus Park case, in the abolition of the no-duty rule in premises cases. But this is a case where the state created this hazard, and it certainly was an unusual, as Webster defines, special situation. It was a 12-foot drop-off. And I would contend that the state has a duty not only on the roadway, but to those that may be traveling down the shoulder, those that may have a flat tire may have to pull off and see this overgrowth of vegetation and not know at the end of it there's a 12-foot drop-off, which could cause serious problems.
Where would you draw the line? This was 22 feet from the roadway. Where would you draw the line? What if it had been 50 feet or 100 feet from the roadway? Would that be a special defect hazardous to motorists?
It could be, Your Honor. It depends on the facts of the case. The facts of this case, there wasn't a severe fall off there. This wasn't any cliff. This was a drop off down to the edge of this box culvert.
That's 22 feet from the roadway.
22 feet.
Well, how, you know, if a roadway, if a motor in public stays on the road, how is that hazard 22 feet away in danger or in any hazard of this defect of 22 feet from the roadway?
In my brief, I mentioned those riding the horse. You know, if a trail ride comes down here, they're going to be using the shoulder. And if they see these bushes, they're not going to know that there's a 12-foot drop-off.
They're not going to ride into the bushes either without knowing. You don't drive into bushes without knowing what's in them.
No, sir. No, sir. But it depends. Well, you might. You know, in this man's case, he was leaving the roadway. He was walking down the shoulder, not the roadway. He left the shoulder portion to go to a point. And he walked through the bushes as it being necessary to get to that point. The bushes obscured the 12-foot drop-off. Certainly he didn't intend to walk off of that. What is in close proximity, Your Honor?
But it wouldn't make any difference if the bushes, to your theory, if the bushes had not obscured. It would still be a special defect, even if it weren't obscured.
Of course, I take the position, I'm not arguing the Payne versus City of Galveston case, but I agree with the dissent in that case, where there is totally open and obvious, not a bush, not any obstruction. And the court held as a matter of law. And that's why I say in this case, the trial court was correct and the appellate court was correct in holding this thing as a matter of law, as the appellate court said, but I think it was really established as really a matter of fact. All the instructions, requisite instructions were given, but back to the special defect. In that situation, the court held because it was open and obvious, which I thought had been dealt with before, that the seawall was not a special defect. But then we've got the Harris County, the city of Harris County versus Dolern, where a panel fell off the wall of a courthouse, and the court held that to be a special defect. By extending Harris County versus Eaton and the Eustim Generis, I think a special defect is anything that's unusual. A different, in this instance, a hazard.
No matter how far from the roadway.
Well, I'm getting off the point here, but even not up on the roadway, even in this courthouse. If something unusual defect, as in the Harris County case, where the wall fell off the courthouse, part of the courthouse, and injured somebody, they held that to be an unusual situation or a special defect. Light pole, in one other case, that was adjacent to the road that fell over and killed someone and held a special defect.
Justice Mosey asked earlier if the issue of special defect is determinative. Do you agree that it is? If this is not a special defect, then you cannot prevail in the case.
No, sir, I disagree. I think I would prevail in this case irrespective of whether it's a special defect or not. Because even if it's a premises defect, under the instructions in my case and under the facts and the uncontroverted evidence, the plaintiff wins in any circumstance. But this case was submitted on the issue of general charge, and we've evolved into special defect, which this court has granted this writ on.
is, am I to understand that it's your contention that the culvert itself is not the special defect? It's the combination of the culvert and the bushes there that make it a special defect?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, it's the entire...
No brush there. If it had been cleared, would that not have been any different? Or are you contending that because there was brush there that obscured the existence of the culvert that becomes a special defect?
It was a combination of the circumstances, Your Honor. This erosion problem was probably the biggest problem out there. This caused the delineators to be slumped off. This is the condition the state was trying to correct, and they'd known about it well in advance of November of 1984.
But if they had corrected the erosion problem, that wouldn't have made any difference as far as the brush and the culvert was concerned.
Your Honor, to answer that question, in my opinion, irrespective of whether or not there had been any erosion or whether or not there had been the excavation, as in the Lee case, this court described a bluff, the excavation, the cavity, the hole, the drop-off should be warned about. In the instant, in this case, the state knew about it. They created it. They knew about it. They therefore have the duty to warn even a licensee. But on the special defect,
But your client knew about it. He had been there many times. He had constructed the blind down there.
Yes.
He knew exactly where it was. He knew exactly where the culvert was. But he proceeded to go there in the dark and made a mistake. Doesn't that make the situation different?
Yes, sir. It has to do, we're considering now his contributory negligence. And in this case, an issue was submitted to the jury, and he was found to be 40% contributory negligent, and the state was found to be 60%. I think that's how that issue is handled.
Are you saying that whenever there is erosion or overgrowth of vegetation, that the state has a duty to warn?
Are correct? Yes, sir. Well, under the Tort Claims Act, not in every case. They may be a licensor in which, if they didn't create it, as they talk about in the Blankenship and in the Payne case, who's the possessor and who had the right. You know, the other cases say that if the state created it, I read that to say they give they make the state responsible to warn if they create it, had knowledge. You come back to the licensor, licensee scenario as to whether what duty to warn is created.
Texas is an awfully large state. There's an awful lot of erosion along highways.
Well, Your Honor, again, if the state knows of it, you know, we've got a lot of state employees, a lot of highway folks. If the state knows of it and if they created it, they've got the duty to protect the public. If it's erosion, if it's a drop-off, a 12-foot drop-off at the end of a culvert, and it's in... It's in a place where it can cause injury. Now, the circumstances of each case, of course...
Let me be sure I understand what you're saying about the erosion. The erosion had nothing to do with the culvert or the brush. The erosion was at a different place, but the erosion took down the sign, the little reflector sign that would have been noticed to anyone driving along there that they shouldn't drive off the edge of the highway. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor, may permit me.
Is that what the erosion did?
The erosion area was here. There was a delineator in this area, but other delineators that had been placed initially had slumped off, had fallen off.
But between his house and the culvert, the delineator was still there.
There was a delineator.
Well, how many had there been?
There had been, I think, at least two. There had been two or more delineators.
But that goes only to the issue of warning, and he already knew about it.
Yes, sir. He knew that there was a culvert. He knew that there was a culvert out there, and at the end of it, there was a drop-off. He misjudged it because of the lack of warning. And again, that goes to his contrib, and it goes to
But the one that was between him and his house, between his house and the culvert, was still standing.
Right, Your Honor. He anticipated that was the one at the end of the culvert. He had already passed it, and he was free to go to his blind. He misjudged by that single delineator. Misplaced the culvert. That's the whole thing that caused his injury. And then that goes to the adequacy of the warning, and it goes into a general negligence case. In this case, I think special defect brings us into ordinary negligence, and I would think because of other reasons, we come into an ordinary negligence case. I submitted this case on a broad form submission, and then when it was taken up on that point, I became somewhat concerned about that submission. But the Court of Civil Appeals said that we have had adequate instructions. We told them everything they needed to know, and that enabled them to find, in this case, that the state was negligent. Under these circumstances, that the state was negligent.
Anything further? Thank you, counsel. Thank you. Rebuttal.
May it please the court. Harrison, brief rebuttal.
Mr. Pierce mentioned the Dallarn case. That case was specifically and by name, I believe, ignored in Blankenship, that dealt with the sole legal precedent of being a non-roadway associated defect, that being the loose partition, I believe, in the Harris County Courthouse that fell on an unfortunate woman. The interesting, there is some language in Dallarn I liked and cited to the Court of Appeals, though, that said even if it's a special defect, the state has a duty to warn those who do not otherwise know of the problem, and I cited it for that proposition. The other case that he mentioned to try to draw an analogy on this, I believe, was City of Austin v. Cooksey, which dealt with a falling light standard, which, as he noted, did fall in the roadway. Actually, it fell on a bulldozer, but it fell on an operator that was known to be operating in that area. I think that does no violence at all to the concept of special defect. Mr. Payne has a problem in this case due to the fact, though he knew about this area, because under a premises defect or a special defect, the state's duty is to warn, and my assertion is that there is no duty to warn. There is nothing gained by warning those with knowledge already.
But if it's a special defect, and if Mr. Payne knew of its existence, then the state's only duty is not to injure willfully or through gross negligence.
That's correct, Your Honor. I would agree with that.
Does the fact issue remain in the case whether the state was grossly negligent?
If it were asserted, I'm sorry, Justice, I don't quite understand that.
Well, if you're right about special defect,
yes,
as a matter of law, and if Mr. Payne knew undisputedly of the existence of the culprit, then there remains a question yet whether the state injured Mr. Payne through gross negligence. Is that true?
That would, had it been alleged, had it been pled, that would go outside under Tennyson v. State, I believe. That is outside the licensee special defect situation, gross negligence.
Your answer, your reason why a new trial would not be required in those circumstances is that it was not pleaded in this case.
Well, in response to that specific question, that's my response. The reason it would render, though, is as the Court of Appeals, the first Court of Appeals held, it's not a special defect. He's barred. If it is due to his knowledge, because the state's duty to warn is vitiated completely. In spite of the fact that the state did warn, as Mr. Pierce has just told you, there was a culprit, there was a object marker there, which he calls a delineator.
How many reflector lights were up there?
The Type 3 object marker that was indisputably there is a Franklin rod that stands about this high, metal pole with three, I believe, yellow reflector buttons on them, which car headlights will pick up.
Okay, and that's what you call a delineator?
No, that's what he calls a delineator. The correct term is a Type 3 object marker.
Okay, and how many of those object markers were placed around this culvert?
At the time of the accident, there is indisputably one standing. There may have been two standing.
How long had they been there?
They had been there for some time. I can't tell you exactly how long they had. Initially, there was one at the head wall of the culvert. As some of this soil moved forward, it leaned forward, and another one was posted here and here. There were two at one time. Mr. Payne asserts that one was gone. That was disputed. But he does not argue or does not dispute the fact that there certainly was at least one standing.
How many were there supposed to be?
The manual uniform traffic control devices makes it a discretionary decision with the state to put only one if they choose.
Did y'all use any visual aids?
In the trial?
Yes, this is the only one we've seen today.
I drew one similar to that on the chalkboard for the jury in that. there were photographs in the record of this case that were taken the following spring. There were no photographs introduced into evidence that looked supposedly anything what this looked like in the frost on the day he was injured. There was evidence that the area was mowed on November 5th, that a mowing cycle ran through the area. So the question of overgrowth was also disputed.
Further questions?
Thank you very much.
Case is submitted on the briefs and oral arguments. We'll take a brief recess.
The aye, please rise.